They had to do, of course quite without comment, with this business of reward and punishment, with the whole complex question of favor, predilection, election, which had been raised with the birth of the moral world, the twin birth of good and evil. It had to do further with the not entirely authoritative but well-founded news conveyed by all these barely moving lips that Shemuel's counsel, his suggestion that God should create the most like creature, in other words, man, that this had not been the last piece of advice he had bestowed upon the throne, that the relation between the latter and the fallen one had never been entirely severed, or else at some later time had been resumed, no one knew how. Perhaps behind the backs of his court he had undertaken a journey to the pit, and there indulged in an exchange of ideas. Perhaps the exile, perhaps more than once, had found a way to leave his own place and speak again before the throne. In any case, he had clearly been in a position to continue his exposition, so cleverly seasoned by surprising candor, and to support it with fresh advice, which, however, as before, did not go deeper than to stimulate ideas already present, and only requiring further persuasion. In order to understand what was going on, we have to recall certain dates and facts which form the premise and prelude of our present story. I refer to that psychological soul novel which was earlier the subject of discussion, that romance of the soul of man, primitive man, which, as formless matter, was from the very first one of the fixed premises, its fall being the conditioned basis of everything that followed. We might perhaps use the word creation. For surely the sin consisted in that the soul, out of a sort of melancholy sensuality, surprising and shocking in a primitive principle proper to the higher world, let itself yield to a craving to penetrate, in love, matter which was formless and obstinately clung to its lack of form, for the purpose of calling up out of it forms through which it could compass fleshly desire. Surely it was the highest who came to the rescue of the soul in that wrestling for love which was far beyond its power. He thereupon created the world, where things happen and can be told, the world of forms, the world of death. This he did out of sympathy for the straits of his erring partner and fellow fixed conditions. We may therefore even infer an affinity between them. If such an inference is to be drawn, we must not neglect to draw it, even if it sound impudent or blasphemous to speak in the same breath of error and weakness. May we associate the idea of error with him? A resounding no can be the only answer to such a question. It was, in fact, the answer of all the heavenly host, accompanied, of course, by that same discreet twist of all the little mouths. It would doubtless be going too far, it would be hasty to consider that the Creator's tender and helpful pity for the erring was the same thing as error itself. That would be premature, because through the creation of the finite life-and-death world of form, no least violence was done to the dignity, spirituality, majesty, or absoluteness of a God who existed before and beyond the world. And thus, up to now, one could not speak seriously of error in any full or actual sense of the word. It was different with the ideas, plans, and desires which were now supposed to be in the air, the subject of private conversations with Shemuel. The latter, of course, pretended to be presenting the throne in all good faith with a perfectly new idea, whereas he was most likely quite aware that he was already more or less occupied with the very same one. Obviously, Shemuel trusted to the widespread, though mistaken, belief that when two people hit on the same idea, it must be a good one. It is futile to go on beating round the bush. What the great Shemuel proposed, one hand on his chin, the other stretched in eloquent peroration toward the throne, was the corporealization of the Most High, his embodiment in a chosen people, not yet born, but to be created. The idea was based on the model of other gods on this earth, folk and tribal gods, mighty in magic, full of fleshly vitality and energy. The word vitality is well chosen, for the chief argument of the pit, just as at the time of the creation, was that the spiritual, the above and beyond the world creator, would experience a great accession of vitality by following Shemuel's advice, only in a much more thoroughgoing and distinctly more fleshly sense. This, I say, was the chief argument, for the clever Pitt had many more, and with more or less justice he assumed that all of them were already at work in the theatre of God's mind, and only needed to be brought forward and stressed. The field of the emotions to which they addressed themselves was ambition. It was ambition, certainly, towards degradation, ambition directed downwards, for in the case of the highest, where there can be no striving upwards, there is only the other direction left. It was an ambition to mingle, a craving to be like the rest, a desire to stop being unusual. Nothing easier than for the Pit to harp on a certain sense of futility, a frustrating vagueness and universality which God must feel when he, a spiritual, supra-worldly world-god, compared himself with the wonder-working and sensual appeal of primitive tribal gods. It was just this that would arouse an ambition to condescend mightily, to submit himself to limitations which would result in a concentration of power. In short, to add the spice of sense to his existence, to exchange a lofty but somewhat anemic spiritual all-sufficiency for the full-blooded fleshly existence of a corporeal folk-god, to be just like the other gods. It was this private, hesitant seeking and striving which Shemuel met with his crafty counsel. To make all this clear, all this exposure and this yielding to infection, it is surely allowable to cite as a parallel that soul novel, the soul's love affair with matter, and the melancholy sensuality which urged it on, in other words, its fall. Indeed, there is scarcely any need to cite. The parallel is so clear, even down to the creative help and sympathy which was then vouchsafed to the erring soul. Surely it was this that gave the great Shemuel courage and maliciousness to make his proposal. Malice, of course, and the burning desire to cause embarrassment were the innermost meaning of the suggestion. Man was already, simply as man, and speaking generally, a source of constant embarrassment to the Creator. The situation must become intolerable through his fleshly union with a particular stock, through an increase of vitality which came to the same thing as becoming biological. All too well did the Pit know nothing good could come of an ambition heading downwards, of an attempt to be like the others. That is to say, to become a racial and folk god, or at least not until after long wandering, embarrassments, disappointments, and embitterment. All too well did the Pit know, what surely God knew too, that after taking his fling at biological vitality as a tribal god, and the doubtful, if also full-blooded, pleasures of a concentrated earthly existence as a folk incarnation, fed and worshipped and propped up by a technique of superstition, that upon all this there would inevitably follow the moment of remorse and reflection, the relinquishing of all these stimulating limitations, the return of the one beyond time to beyond time, the resumption of all power and spiritual all-competence. But what Shemuel, and he alone, cherished in his heart of hearts, was the thought that this very about-face and return, comparable to the end of an era, must be accompanied by a certain chagrin. And the thought was a sweet savour on the tongue of the source of all malice. By chance, or not by chance, it came about that the particular stock chosen and dedicated for a folk embodiment, was so constituted that the world god, in that he became its corporeal deity, not only had to surrender his superior rank above the other folk gods of this earth and become like them, but actually in power and honor fell considerably below them, at which the Pit rejoiced. In the second place, the whole declension to the state of folk god, the whole experiment of biological sense-enjoyment, was from the very beginning against the better knowledge and deeper insight of the chosen stock itself. Indeed, it was not without the intensive spiritual cooperation of the chosen seed that God thought better of his plan, was converted, and turned back to his superior, otherworldly, and beyond-the-worldly rank above all other gods. It was this that tickled Shemuel's malicious soul. To represent the godhead of this particular stock was, on the one hand, no great joy. It was not, as they say, any great shakes, for among the various folk-gods it invariably took a back seat. But on the other hand, and in consequence, the quality common to the human race, of being an instrument of God's self-knowledge, here came out in peculiar strength. An urgent concern with the nature and status of God was native to it. From the very first, it had the beginning of a lively insight into the Creator's otherworldness, universality, spirituality, his quality of being the theater of the world, but the world not his theater. Just as the storyteller is the theater of the story, but the story not his theater, which circumstance gives him the chance to deal with it. It was a seed capable of evolution, destined in time and with enormous effort to mature into full knowledge of God's true nature. May one assume that this was precisely the ground of its election? That the issue of the biological adventure was no better known to him who gave the counsel than to him who received it? That he himself consciously brought about the so-called chagrin and admonishment? Maybe we are driven to such a view. Anyhow, in Shemuel's eyes, the point of the joke lay in the fact that the chosen seed was privately and subconsciously aware from the start that it knew better than the tribal god, and exerted all this strength of its expanding reason to help him out of his improper situation and back into the beyond all, all-sufficing spiritual. Even so, the pit's assertion remains unproved that the return from the fall to the original position of honor could never have been possible without that human exertion, and could never have happened save by its means. The hierarchy was not far-sighted enough to go so far as this. It stopped at the gossip about secret conferences with Shemuel and the subject of these, but that was far enough to add fuel to the chronic angelic irritation with the most like creature and to the chosen seed now in process of evolution. It was far enough to make the hierarchy privately rejoice at the little flood and the rain of sulphur which he, greatly to his own distress, was obliged to visit upon a scion of the stock, despite his far-reaching designs in its favor, and with the ill-concealed purpose of making the punishment a vehicle to serve his plans. All this was what they expressed, those little O-shaped mouths drawn down at the corners, and the scarcely perceptible jerk of the head by which the heavenly choirs drew attention to the figure standing, arms bound behind his back, in a sailboat propelled by oars over the river of Egypt and down to his prison. It was the scion of the chosen seed.